this. Who knows? Maybe that outburst in the parking lot let out some of the darkness Sonia says is in my aura. Skeptic that I am, I have to give her some points. She was right that I was at a breaking point, that all I needed was a spark.
She was right about something else, too, Dimitri said after a long pause.
My back was to him, but there was a strange quality to his voice that made me turn around. What's that? I asked.
That I do still love you.
With that one sentence, everything in the universe changed. Time slowed to one heartbeat. The world became his eyes, his voice. This wasn't happening. It wasn't real. None of it could be real. It felt like a spirit dream. I resisted the urge to close my eyes and see if I'd wake up moments later. No. No matter how unbelievable it all seemed, this was no dream. This was real. This was life. This was flesh and blood. Since when? I finally managed to ask.
Since forever.
His tone implied the answer was obvious.
I denied it when I was restored. I had no room for anything in my heart except guilt. I especially felt guilty about you, what I'd done, and I pushed you away. I put up a wall to keep you safe. It worked for a while, until my heart finally started accepting other emotions. And it all came back, everything I felt for you. It had never left. It was just hidden from me until I was ready. And again, that alley was the turning point. I looked at you, saw your goodness, your hope, and your faith. Those are what make you beautiful. So, so beautiful.
So, it wasn't my hair? I said, unsure how I was even capable of making a joke at a time like this.
No, he said gently. Your hair was beautiful, too. All of you, you were amazing when we first met, and somehow, inexplicably, you've come even farther. You've always been pure, raw energy, and now you control it. You're the most amazing woman I've ever met, and I'm glad to have had that love for you in my life. I regret losing it.
He grew pensive.
I would give anything. Anything in the world to go back and change history. To run into your arms after Lisa brought me back. To have a life with you. It's too late, of course, but I've accepted it.
Why? Why is it too late? Dimitri's eyes grew sad.
Because of Adrian. Because you've moved on. No, listen.
He said, cutting off my protests.
You were right to do that after how I treated you. And more than anything else, I want you to be happy once we clear your name and get Jill recognized. You said yourself that Adrian makes you happy. You said you love him.
But you just said you love me. That you want to be with me. My words seemed clumsy, unworthy of his eloquence.
And I told you. I'm not going to pursue another man's girlfriend. You want to talk honor? There it is in its purest form.
I walked toward him, each step ramping up the tension around us. Dimitri kept saying the alley was his turning point. For me, it was now. I stood on the precipice of something that would change my life. For the last week, I'd done a very good job of detaching myself from anything romantic with Dimitri. And yet, had I? What was love, really? Flowers, chocolate, and poetry? Or was it something else? Was it being able to finish someone's jokes? Was it having absolute faith that someone was there at your back? Was it knowing someone so well that they instantly understood why you did the things you did? And shared those same beliefs? All week, I'd claimed my love for Dimitri was fading. In reality, it had been growing more and more, I hadn't even realized it was happening. I had been reestablishing our old rapport, strengthening the connections, reaffirming that of all the people in the world, even Lissa, Dimitri was the only one who truly got me. I'd meant it. I loved Adrian. It was hard to imagine life without him. But my other words of the Mastranos had betrayed me. I have fun with him. Now, you should have fun with the one you loved, but that shouldn't have been what first came to mind. I should have said, we strengthen each other, or he makes me want to be a better person. Perhaps most importantly, he understands me perfectly. But none of that was true, so I hadn't said those things. I'd sought Adrian for comfort. His familiarity and humor were an important part of my world. And if he was in danger, I'd throw my life before his, just as I would for Lissa. Yet, I didn't inspire him, not really. He was trying. He did want to be a better person. But at this moment in his life, his motivations were more about impressing others, about impressing me. It wasn't for himself. That didn't make him bad or weak, but it made me his crutch. He would get past that, I was certain. He would eventually come into his own and be an amazing man. But he wasn't at that point of self-discovery yet. I was. I stood in front of Dimitri now, looking into those dark eyes again, the eyes I loved so much. I placed my hands on his chest, feeling his heart beating strong and steady, and maybe a bit faster than normal. Warmth spread through my fingertips. He reached up and caught hold of my wrists, but didn't push me away. The lines of that gorgeous face looked strained as he fought some inner conflict. But now that I knew for sure, I could see his love for me. Love mingled with desire. It was so, so obvious. "You should have told me," I said. "You should have told me this a long time ago. I love you. I've never stopped loving you. You have to know that." His breath caught when I said, "I love you," and I could see his internal struggle for control become an all-out war.
"It wouldn't have made any difference, not with Adrian involved," he said.
The fingers around my hand tightened slightly as though he really might push me away this time. He didn't.
"I mean it. I won't be that guy, Rose. I won't be that man who takes someone else's woman. Now, please let go. Don't make this any more difficult."
I ignored the request. If he'd wanted to get away from me, he could have. I splayed my fingers, touching more of his chest, drinking in the feel of that warm contact I'd missed for so long. "I don't belong to him," I said in a low voice, pushing close to Dimitri and tilting my head back so that I could see his face clearly. So much emotion, so much conflict as his heart tried to decide right from wrong. Being pressed against him felt like completion. Sonia had said no couple could share one aura or one soul, but ours weren't meant to be apart. They fit together like a puzzle. Two individuals making something greater than themselves. "I don't belong to anyone. I make my own choices."
"And you're with Adrian," said Dimitri.
"But I was meant for you."
And that did it. Any pretense of control or reason either of us possessed melted away. The walls crumbled and everything we'd been holding back from each other came rushing out. I reached up, pulling us together for a kiss. A kiss he didn't let go this time. A kiss I didn't end by punching him. His arms encircled me as he lifted me onto the bed, one hand soon sliding along my hip and down to my leg. Already half bare, thanks to that poor tattered dress. Every nerve in my body lit up, and I felt that desire returned in him, and then some. After a world of death, he seemed to appreciate love more. Not only that, he needed it. He needed life. He needed me. Not just physically, but in the same way my heart and soul always cried out for him. What we did then, as our clothes came off and we brought our bodies together, became more than just lust, even though there was plenty of that, too. Being with him after so long, after everything we'd endured, it was like coming home. Like finally being where, with whom, I belonged. My world, my heart, they'd shattered when I lost him. But as he looked at me, as his lips spoke my name and ran along my skin, I knew those pieces could come back together. And I knew with absolute certainty that waiting for this, for my second time having sex, had been the right thing to do. Anyone else, any other time, it would have been wrong. When we finished, it was like we still couldn't get close enough. We held each other tightly, our limbs entwined, as though maybe closing the distance now would make up for the distance that had been between us for so long. I closed my eyes, my senses flooded with him, and sighed dreamily. I'm glad you gave in. I'm glad your self-control isn't as strong as mine. This made him laugh, and I felt it rumble through his chest.
Rosa, my self-control is 10 times stronger than yours.
I opened my eyes, shifting to look into his. I brushed his hair back and smiled, certain my heart would expand and expand until there was nothing left of me. Oh yeah? That's not the impression I just got.
Wait until next time,
he warned.
I'll do things that'll make you lose control within seconds.
That comment was just asking for a witty Rose Hathaway quip. It also made my blood burn, which was why we were both surprised when I abruptly said, there may not be a next time. Dimitri's hand, tracing the shape of my shoulder, froze.
What? Why?
We have a couple of things to do before this happens again.
Adrian,
he guessed. I nodded. And that's my problem, so put your honorable thoughts aside. I have to face him and answer for this. I will. And you, I couldn't believe what I was about to say. I couldn't believe I meant it. You still have to forgive yourself if we're going to be together. His puzzled expression turned to pain.
Rose,
I'm serious. I met his eyes unflinchingly. You have to forgive yourself, for real. Everyone else has. If you can't, then you can't go on either. We can't. It was one of the biggest gambles of my life. Once I would have run to him without question, ignoring our problems, overjoyed just to be with him. Now, after everything I'd been through, I'd changed. I loved him. I loved him so much, and I wanted him. But it was because of the strength of that love that I had to do this. If we were going to be together, we had to do it the right way. Sex had been amazing, but it wasn't a magical cure for everything. Damn. Somewhere along the way, I'd picked up common sense. I still intended to confront Adrian, and if Dimitri wouldn't do what I asked, I really would walk away. I'd lose both men, but it was better to be alone with my self-respect than be in the wrong relationship.
I don't know, Dimitri said at last. I don't know if I can, if I'm ready.
Decide soon then, I said. You don't have to right this second, but eventually... I didn't push the topic after that. For now, I would let it go, though I knew he would hold on to it and grasp its importance. I knew I was right to stand by it, too. He couldn't be happy with me if he wasn't happy with himself. It occurred to me then, as I stood up for myself and what I needed, that our old teacher-student roles were gone forever. Now we really were equals. I rested my head on his chest and felt him relax. We'd bask in this moment, if only for a little longer. Sonia had said we needed rest, making me think we still had some time here before the ticking clock drove us back to court. As Dimitri and I continued to keep close to one another, I found myself actually wanting to sleep. I was exhausted from the fight, which, I realized, had taken a very unexpected turn. My guilt and despair over Victor and the explosion of spirit had taken their toll, too, no matter the healing locket still around my neck. And yes, I thought with a small smile, I was simply exhausted from what Dimitri and I had just done. It was kind of nice to use my body for something that didn't result in serious injury for a change. I fell asleep in his embrace, blackness wrapping around me as warmly as his arms. It should have been that simple. It should have been peaceful, happy rest. But, as usual, I wasn't that lucky. A spirit dream pulled me from the enveloping depths of sleep, and for half a second, I thought maybe Robert DeRue had come for me to take revenge for his brother's death. But no. No vindictive Dashkoff. Instead, I found myself staring into a pair of emerald green eyes. Adrian. Chapter 30. I didn't run into his arms like I usually did. How could I? After what I'd done? No, I couldn't play act anymore. I still wasn't entirely sure what the future held for Dimitri and me. Not until he answered my ultimatum. I did, however, know I had to cut Adrian loose. My feelings for him were still strong, and I wondered if it was even remotely possible for us to be friends. Regardless, I couldn't lead him on after sleeping with Dimitri. It hadn't been murder, no, but it had certainly been dishonorable. Yet, I couldn't say any of that to Adrian now, I realized. I couldn't break up with him in a dream. That was almost as bad as a text breakup. Besides, I had a feeling that, well, I'd probably need his help. So much for honor. Soon, I swore. Soon I'll tell him. He didn't seem to notice my lack of embrace, but he did notice something else.
Wow.
We stood in St. Vladimir's library, of all places, and I gave him a puzzled look across the study table stretching before us. Wow, what?
Your aura. It's amazing. It's shining. I mean, it always shines, but today, well, I've never seen anything like it. I didn't expect that after everything that happened.
I shifted uncomfortably. If I lit up around Dimitri normally, what on earth happened to my aura post-sex? After what happened? I asked, deflecting the comment. He chuckled and approached me. His hand reached unconsciously for his cigarettes, paused, and then dropped to his side.
Oh, come on. Everyone's talking about it. How you and Belikov kidnapped Jailbait. What's up with that, anyway? And coerced that alchemist? It's the hottest news around here. Well, aside from the elections. The last test is coming up.
That's right, I murmured. It had almost been 24 hours since Lyssa had received the riddle. There was only a little time left, and last I knew, she had no answer.
Why are you sleeping in the middle of the day, anyway?
He asked.
I didn't really expect to catch you. Figured you'd be on a human schedule.
It was kind of a rough night. What with escaping a legion of guardians and all. Adrian caught hold of my hand, frowning slightly when I didn't squeeze his in return. The frown lightened quickly into his easy smile.
Well, I'd worry more about your old man than them. He is pissed that you didn't stay put, and that he can't get in to see the alchemists. Believe me, he's been trying.
That almost made me laugh, except it wasn't the outcome I'd wanted either. So he's not all-powerful after all, I sighed. That's what we need, Sydney. Or, well, that guy who's with her, the one who allegedly knows something. I flashed back, again seeing the recognition on Ian's face. He knows the man who attacked Lyssa and bribed Joe. We need him.
From what I picked up,
said Adrian,
the Guardians are just kind of lingering around the hotel, mostly concerned with the alchemists leaving. But they're controlling who's getting in. They won't let any of us or other alchemists get through. There are lots of other human guests, and I guess Abe tried to disguise himself and failed.
Poor Zmay. He should have had more faith in the Guardians. They aren't going to let anyone but themselves get in and out. My own words brought me to a halt. That's it. Adrian eyed me suspiciously.
Oh, no. I know that look. Something crazy is about to happen.
I caught hold of his hand, now out of excitement rather than love. Get to Mikhail. Have him meet us. I blanked. I'd seen the town the alchemists were staying in. As the closest to court, we often drove through it. I racked my brain, trying to think of some detail. At that restaurant with the red sign. It's on the far side, always advertising buffets.
Easier said than done, little Dampier. They're using every guardian at court to keep the elections under control. If Lyssa hadn't been attacked, they wouldn't let your mom stay with her. I don't think Mikhail can get out.
He'll find a way, I said confidently. Tell him this is it. It's the key to the murder. The answer. He's resourceful. Adrian looked skeptical, but it was hard for him to refuse me anything.
When?
When, indeed. It was almost noon, and I hadn't paid much attention to where we'd stopped. How long would it take us to reach court? From what I knew about the elections, those who passed this last test would give speeches when the Moroi Day started. In theory, they'd then go straight to voting. Except if our plan worked, Lyssa's involvement would slow that down for days. Provided she passed. Midnight, I said. If I was guessing correctly, the court would be completely wrapped up in the election drama, making it easier for Mikhail to get out. I hoped. Will you tell him?
Anything for you.
Adrian swept me a gallant bow.
Although, I still think it's dangerous for you to be involved directly with this.
I have to do this myself, I said. I can't hide. He nodded as though he understood. I wasn't sure he did. Thank you, I told him. Thank you so much for everything. Now go. Adrian gave me a crooked grin.
Boy, you don't waste any time kicking a guy out of bed, huh?
I flinched, the joke hitting a little too close to home. I want Mikhail to be prepared, and I also need to watch Lyssa's last test. This sobered Adrian.
Does she have a chance? Will she pass?
I don't know, I admitted. This is a tough one.
Okay, we'll see what we can do.
He gave me a small kiss. My lips responded automatically, but my heart wasn't into it.
And Rose, I mean it. Be careful. You're going to be awfully close to court. Not to mention a bunch of guardians who have you on their most wanted list and will try to kill you.
I know, I said, choosing not to mention that there was no probably about it. With that, he vanished. And I woke. Strangely, what I found in my own world seemed almost more dreamlike than what I'd experienced with Adrian. Dimitri and I were still in bed, snuggled under the covers, our bodies and limbs still wrapped around each other. He slept with that rare, peaceful look of his, and almost seemed to smile. For half a second, I considered waking him and telling him we had to hit the road. A look at the clock happily squashed that thought. We still had time. Plus, it was getting close to the test. I had to go to Lyssa and trusted Sonia would come by if we overslept. Sure enough, I'd gauged the testing correctly. Lyssa was cutting across the court's lawns, marching like someone going to a funeral. The sun, flowers, and birds were lost on her. Even her company did little to cheer her up. Christian, my mom, and Tasha. I can't do this, she said, staring ahead at the building that held her fate. I can't do this test. The tattoo kept her from giving out any more information.
You're smart. Brilliant.
Christian's arm was around her waist, and in that moment, I loved him for his confidence in her.
You can do it.
You don't understand, she said with a sigh. She'd come up with no answers to the riddle, meaning the plan was at stake, and her desire to prove herself.
For once he does, said Tasha,
a slight teasing tone in her voice.
You can do it. You have to do it. We have so much riding on it.
Her confidence didn't make Lissa feel better. If anything, it added to the pressure. She would fail, just like in the council dream the chalice had shown her. She'd had no answer there, either.
Lissa!
A voice brought them to a halt, and Lissa turned to see Serena running toward them, her long athletic legs quickly covering the distance between them.
Hi, Serena, said Lissa. We can't stop the test.
I know, I know. Serena was flushed, not with exertion, but with anxiety. She proffered a piece of paper.
I made your list, as many as I could remember.
What list? Asked Tasha.
Maroi that the queen was having trained, to see how well they could learn fighting.
Tasha's eyebrows rose in surprise. She hadn't been around when they discussed it last time.
Tatiana was training fighters? I never heard about anything like that.
I had a feeling she would have liked to be one of the ones helping with instruction.
Most didn't,
agreed Lissa, straightening the piece of paper.
It was a big secret.
The group crowded around to read the names, listed in Serena's neat handwriting. Christian let out a low whistle.
Tatiana might have been open to the idea of defense, but only for certain people.
Yes, agreed Tasha. This is definitely an A-list. All the names were royal. Tatiana hadn't brought in commoners for her experiment. This was the elite of the elite. Though, as Ambrose had noted, Tatiana had gone out of her way to get a variety of ages and genders.
Camille Conta? Asked Lissa in surprise. Never saw that coming. She was always really bad in P.E.
And there's another of our cousins,
added Christian, pointing to Leah Ozera. He glanced at Tasha, who was still in disbelief.
Did you know that?
No, I wouldn't have guessed her either. Half the nominees, too,
mused Lissa. Rufus Taurus, Ava Drozdoff, and Alice Batica.
Too bad they... Oh my god! Adrian's mother?
Sure enough, Daniela Ivashkov.
Whoa,
said Christian. That summed up my reaction, too.
Pretty sure Adrian didn't know about that.
Does she support Maroi fighting?
Asked my mom, surprised as well. Lissa shook her head.
No. From what I know about her, she was definitely in favor of leaving defense to Dampier's.
Neither of us could imagine beautiful and proper Daniela Ivashkov in a fight.
She already hated Tatiana, noted Tasha. I'm sure this did lovely things for their relationship. Those two bickered all the time behind closed doors.
An uncomfortable silence fell. Lissa looked at Serena.
Did these people see the queen a lot? Would they have had access to her?
Yes, said Serena uneasily. According to Grant, Tatiana watched every training session. After he died, she started debriefing with the students individually to see how well they'd learned.
She paused.
I think she might have met with some the night she died.
Had they progressed enough to learn to use a stake?
Asked Lissa. Serena grimaced.
Yes, some better than others.
Lissa looked back at the list, feeling ill. So much opportunity, so much motivation. Was the answer here on this piece of paper? Was the murderer right before her? Serena had said earlier that Tatiana had purposely picked people resistant to training, probably to see if the obstinate could still learn. Had she gone too far with someone? One name in particular kept scrolling across Lissa's mind.
"I hate to interrupt," said my mother. Her tone and stance indicated sleuth time was over. It was back to business. "We've got to move, or you'll be late."
Lissa realized my mom was right and shoved the piece of paper in her pocket. Being late to the test meant failure. Lissa thanked Serena, reassuring her that this had been the right thing to do. Then my friends moved away quickly, feeling the press of time as they hurried toward the testing building.
"Damn," muttered Lissa, in a rare show of swearing. "I don't think that old lady will tolerate any lateness."
"Old lady?"
My mother laughed, surprising us all. She could move faster than everyone and was obviously restraining her pace for them.
"The one running most of the tests? You don't know who she is?"
"How would I?" asked Lissa. "I figured she was just someone they recruited."
"Not just someone. That's Ekaterina Zeklos."
"What?"
Lissa nearly stopped, but still had their time crunch in mind.
She was the queen before Tatiana, right?"
"I thought she retired to some island," said Christian, just as surprised.
"Not sure if it was an island," said Tasha, "but she did step down when she thought she was too old and went off to live in luxury, and away from politics, once Tatiana was on the throne."
"Too old? That had been 20 years ago. No wonder she seemed ancient."
"If she was happy to get out of politics, then why is she back?" asked Lissa.
My mother opened the door for all of them when they reached the building, after first peering inside for any threats. It was so instinctual for her that she continued the conversation without missing a beat.
"Because it's custom for the last monarch to test the new one, if possible. In this case, it obviously wasn't, so Ekaterina came out of retirement to do her duty."
Lissa could barely believe that she'd been chatting casually with the Marois' last queen, a very powerful and beloved queen. As soon as her group entered the hallway, Lissa was escorted by guardians and hurried toward the testing room. Their faces showed they hadn't thought she'd make it. Several spectators, also apparently worried, cheered at her appearance, giving the usual shouts about Alexandra and the dragons. Lissa had no chance to respond or even say goodbye to her friends before she was practically pushed into the room. The guardians looked relieved. The door shut, and Lissa found herself staring once more at Ekaterina Zeklos. Seeing the old woman had been intimidating before, but now Lissa's anxiety doubled. Ekaterina gave her a crooked smile.
"I was afraid you wouldn't make it," she said. "Should have known better. You aren't the type to back down."
Lissa was still starstruck and almost felt the need to ramble out an excuse, explaining about Serena's list. But no, Ekaterina didn't care about that right now. And one didn't make excuses to someone like her anyway, Lissa decided. If you screwed up, you apologized.
"I'm sorry," said Lissa.
"No need to be," said Ekaterina. "You made it. Do you know the answer? What must a queen possess in order to truly rule her people?"
Lissa's tongue felt thick in her mouth. She didn't know the answer. It really was just like the council dream. Investigating Tatiana's murder had taken so much time. For a strange moment, Lissa's heart burned with sympathy for that prickly queen. She'd done what she thought best for the Marois and had died for it. Lissa even felt bad now, staring at Ekaterina. This former queen had probably never expected to be taken away from her island, retirement, and forced back into court life. Yet, she had come when needed. And just like that, Lissa suddenly knew the answer.
"Nothing," she said softly. "A queen must possess nothing to rule because she has to give everything she has to her people, even her life."
The widening of Ekaterina's gap-toothed grin told Lissa she'd answered correctly.
Congratulations, my dear. You've made it through to tomorrow's vote. I hope you've got a speech ready to win over the council. You'll have to give it in the morning.
Lissa swayed slightly, not sure what to say now, let alone in a formal speech. Ekaterina seemed to sense how in shock Lissa was, and the smile that always seemed so mischievous turned gentle.
You'll be fine. You made it this far. The speech is the easy part. Your father would be proud. All the Dragomirs before you would be.
That nearly brought tears to Lissa's eyes, and she shook her head.
I don't know about that. We all know I'm not a real candidate. This was just, well, kind of an act.
Somehow she didn't feel bad admitting that in front of Ekaterina.
Ariana's the one who deserves the crown.
Ekaterina's ancient eyes bored into Lissa, and that smile faded.
You haven't heard then. No, of course you wouldn't have with how quickly this is all happening.
Heard what?
Sympathy washed over Ekaterina's face, and later, I'd wonder if that compassion was because of the message she delivered or because of Lissa's reaction.
Ariana Zelsky didn't pass this test. She couldn't solve the riddle.
Rose.
Dimitri was shaking me, and it took several seconds for me to shift from being a shocked Lissa to a startled Rose.
We have to, he began.
Oh my God, I interrupted. You will not believe what I just saw. He went rigid.
Is Lissa okay?
Yeah, fine, but...
Then we'll worry about that later. Right now, we have to leave.
I noticed then that he was fully dressed while I was still naked. What's going on?
Sonia came by. Don't worry.
The shock that my face must have shown made him smile.
I got dressed and didn't let her come in, but she said the front desk called. They're starting to realize we had an unusual check-in. We need to get out of here.
Midnight. We had to meet Mikhail at midnight and get the last piece of the mystery that consumed us. No problem, I said, tossing the covers off me. As I did, I saw Dimitri's eyes on me, and I was kind of surprised at the admiration and hunger I saw there. Somehow, even after sex, I'd kind of expected him to be detached and wear his guardian face, particularly considering our sudden urgency to leave.
You see something you like?
I asked, echoing something I'd said to him long ago, when he'd caught me in a compromising position at school.
Lots,
he said. The emotion burning in those eyes was too much for me. I looked away, my heart pounding in my chest as I pulled my clothes on. Don't forget, I said softly. Don't forget. I couldn't finish, but there was no need.
I know, Rosa. I haven't forgotten.
I slipped on my shoes, wishing I was weaker and would let my ultimatum slide. I couldn't, though. No matter what had passed between us verbally and physically, no matter how close we were to our fairy tale ending, there was no future until he could forgive himself. Sonia and Jill were ready and waiting when we emerged from our room, and something told me Sonia knew what had happened between Dimitri and me. Damned auras. Or maybe you didn't need magical powers to see that kind of thing. Maybe the afterglow just naturally showed on someone's face. I need you to make a charm, I told Sonia, once we were on the road. And we have to stop in Greenston.
Greenston?
Asked Dimitri.
What for?
It's where the alchemists are being held. I had already started slinging the pieces together. Who hated Tatiana, both because of her personality and for having Ambrose? Who resented her wanting Maroi to fight Strigoi? Who feared her endorsing spirit and its dangerous effects on people, say like Adrian? Who wanted to see a different family on the throne to support new beliefs? And who would be happy to have me locked away and out of the picture?
I took a deep breath, scarcely believing what I was about to say. And it's where we're going to find proof that Daniela Ivashkov murdered Tatiana. Chapter 31. I wasn't the only one who had come to that startling conclusion. When the Moroi court woke up several hours into our road trip, Lissa was also putting all the pieces together in her room as she prepared herself to give her pre-election speech. She'd thought of all the arguments I had, plus a few more, like how frantic Daniela had been that Adrian might be implicated with me, which would undoubtedly unravel a carefully laid out plan. There was also Daniela's offer of having her lawyer cousin, Damon Taurus, defend me. Would that have actually helped? Or would Damon have subtly worked to weaken my defense? Abe's uncouth involvement might have been a blessing. Lissa's heart pounded rapidly as she twisted her hair into a chignon. She preferred it down, but thought for the coming event, she should put on a more dignified look. Her dress was matte ivory silk, long-sleeved and ruched, about knee length. Some might have thought wearing that color would make her look bridal, but when I saw her in the mirror, I knew no one would make that mistake. She looked luminous, radiant, queenly.
"It can't be true," she said, completing the look with pearl earrings that had belonged to her mother.
She had shared her theory with Christian and Janine, who were with her now, and had half hoped they'd tell her she was crazy. They hadn't.
"It makes sense," said Christian with none of his usual snark.
"There's just no proof quite yet," my mother said, ever practical. "Lots of circumstantial stuff."
"Aunt Tosh is checking with Ethan to see if Daniela was there the night of the murder," said Christian.
He made a slight face, still not happy about his aunt having a boyfriend.
"Daniela wasn't on the official lists, but Aunt Tosh is worried some things might have been altered."
"That wouldn't surprise me. Even so, putting Daniela there at the right time builds the case but still isn't hard proof."
My mother should have been an attorney. She and Abe could have opened a law firm together.
"It's as much proof as they've got for Rose," exclaimed Lissa.
"Aside from the stake," Janine reminded her. "And people are more willing to believe sketchy evidence about Rose than Lady Daniela Ivashkov."
Lissa sighed, knowing it was all true.
"If only Abe could talk to the alchemists. We need what they know."
"He'll do it," said my mother confidently. "It'll just take time."
"We don't have time."
The dramatic turn of events was giving Spirit a nice chance to raise its ugly head, and like always, I tried to pull the darkness from Lissa. You'd think I would have learned my lesson after Victor, but well, old habits died hard. They come first.
"Marie Conta and Rufus Taurus are the only candidates left. If he wins, Danielle is going to have a lot of influence. We'll never prove Rose is innocent then."
Ariana failing the last test had come as a huge blow to everyone, smashing a future Lissa had thought was set in stone. Without Ariana, the outcome didn't look good. Marie Conta wasn't Lissa's favorite person, but Lissa felt she'd make a much better ruler than Rufus. Unfortunately, the Conta family had been quiet in politics in recent years, giving them fewer allies and friends. The numbers were leaning dangerously toward Rufus. It was frustrating. If we could get Jill there, Lissa could vote, and on a council of 12, even one vote would be powerful.
"We have time," my mom said calmly. "There'll be no vote today, not with the controversy you'll cause. And for every day the election is delayed, we have another chance to build our case. We're close. We can do it."
"We can't tell Adrian about this,"
warned Lissa, moving toward the door. It was time to go. Christian's trademark smirk returned.
"That," he said, "is something we can all agree on."
The elaborate ballroom, yet again made a council room for size reasons, looked like a rock concert. People were fighting for spots inside,
Some, realizing that was futile, had camped outside the building, picnic style. Someone had thankfully had the brilliant idea to hook up a sound system with outdoor speakers, so that those who didn't make it in could still hear the proceedings. Guardians moved through the crowds, trying to contain the chaos, particularly as the candidates arrived. Marie Conta had shown up just before Lissa, and even if she was the least likely candidate, there were still roars and surges of excitement in the crowd. Guardians hastily, and roughly if necessary, held the mob back so she could pass. That attention had to be scary, but Marie didn't show it. She walked proudly, smiling at supporters and non-supporters alike. Both Lissa and I recalled Christian's words. "You're a queenly nominee. Act like it. You deserve this. You're the last Dragomir, a daughter of royalty." And that was exactly how she behaved. It was more than Christian's urging, too. Now that she'd passed all three tests, the gravity of the ancient procedure she was entering continued to grow. Lissa walked in, her head held high. I couldn't see her whole body, but I recognized the feel of her walk. Graceful, stately. The crowd loved it, and it occurred to me that this group was particularly vocal because most weren't royal. Those gathered outside were ordinary Maroi, the ones who had come to truly love her.
"Alexandra's heir! Bring back the dragon!"
For some, it was simply enough to shout her name, adding on the titles of an old Russian folktale heroine who shared the same name.
"Vasilisa the Brave!
Vasilisa the Beautiful!"
I knew no one would guess the fear she felt inside. She was that good. Christian and my mother, who had initially flanked her, fell back as one, letting Lissa walk a couple steps ahead. There was no question of Lissa's position and authority. She took each step with confidence, remembering that her grandfather had also walked this path. She tried to give the crowd a smile that was both dignified but genuine. It must have worked because they went even wilder. And when she paused to comment on a dragon banner a man had painted in support, the artist nearly passed out that someone like her would notice and compliment him. "This is unprecedented," remarked my mom once they safely made it inside. "There's never been this sort of turnout. There certainly wasn't during the last election."
"Why so great this time?"
asked Lissa, who was trying to get her breathing under control.
"Because there's so much sensation between the murder and you muddling the law. That and, well, the way you're winning the hearts of every non-royal out there. The Dompiers, too. There's a dragon sign in one of our coffee rooms, you know. I even think some of the royals love you. Though maybe it's just despite whatever family they're feuding with. But seriously, if this were up to all of the people, and not just the council, and, well, if it was a vote you were eligible for, I think you'd win."
Lissa grimaced, but then reluctantly added,
"Honestly, I think we should have popular votes for our leaders. Every Maroi should cast a vote, not just a handful of elite families."
"Careful there, princess,"
teased Christian, putting his arm through hers.
"That's the kind of talk that'll start another revolution. One at a time, okay?"
The ballroom's crowd wasn't as crazy as the outside one had been, but was pretty close. The guardians were ready for the numbers this time and had made sure to keep strict control from the very beginning. They kept a tight count of how many were allowed in the room and stopped royal and non-royal squabbles. It was still intimidating, and Lissa reminded herself over and over that playing this role was helping me. For me, she would endure anything, even the fanfare. This time, fortunately, Lissa was swept up pretty quickly to the room's front, to where three chairs facing the crowd had been set up for the candidates. Rufus and Marie were already seated, speaking in low voices to a few select family members. Guardians stood around them. Lissa sat alone, of course, but nodded to nearby guards when Tasha approached. Tasha crouched beside Lissa, speaking low and keeping a wary eye on Rufus as he talked to someone. Bad news. Well, depending on how you look at it. Ethan says Daniela was there that night. She and Tatiana met alone. He didn't realize it hadn't been put on the records. Someone else wrote those up on behalf of all the guards on duty. But he swears he saw Daniela himself.
Lissa winced. Secretly, she'd been hoping, praying even, that she'd made a mistake, that surely Adrian's mother couldn't have done this. She gave a swift nod to show she understood.
I'm sorry, said Tasha. I know you liked her.
I think I'm more worried about Adrian. I don't know how he'll take it.
Hard, said Tasha bluntly.
After what she'd faced with Christian's parents, she knew better than anyone else what it was like to have family betray you.
But he'll make it through. And as soon as we can put all this evidence forward, we'll have Dimitri and Rose back.
Those words filled Lissa with hope, strengthening her.
I miss her so much, she said. I wish she was here already.
Tasha gave her a sympathetic smile and patted her shoulder.
Soon. They'll be back soon. Just get through this for now. You can do this. You can change everything.
Lissa wasn't so sure about that, but Tasha hurried off to join her activist friends and was replaced by Daniela. She'd come to talk to Rufus, offering support and family love. Lissa couldn't bear to look at the older woman and felt even worse when Daniela spoke to her.
I'm not sure how you got involved with this, dear, but good luck.
Daniela's smile seemed sincere, but there was no question which candidate she supported. Her kindly expression turned to concern.
Have you seen Adrian? I thought for sure he'd be here. I know the Guardians would let him in.
Excellent question. Lissa hadn't seen him in the last day or so.
I haven't. Maybe he's just running late. Doing his hair or something.
Hopefully not passed out somewhere. Daniela sighed.
I hope so.
She left, taking a seat in the audience. Once again, Adrian's father was running the session, and after several false starts, the room quieted.
In the last week, Nathan began,
speaking into a microphone,
many worthy candidates have taken the tests required to rule our people. Before us sit the final three, Rufus Taris, Marie Kanta, and Vasilisa Dragomir.
Nathan's tone sounded displeased over that last one, but thus far, the law would let her give her speech. After that, the law's inconsistency kicked in, and all hell would break loose.
These three have shown they have the ability to rule. And as their last act, before we vote, each will speak about their plans for our people.
Rufus was up first, delivering exactly the kind of speech I'd expected. He played on Maroi's fears, promising extreme forms of protection, most of which involved Dompierre's but didn't get into much detail.
Our safety must be our top priority, he proclaimed. At all costs. Will it be difficult? Yes. Will there be sacrifices? Yes. But aren't our children worth it? Don't we care about them?
Bringing children into it was just low, I decided. At least he'd left puppies out. He also used dirty politician tricks, slandering his rivals. Marie was mostly slammed for her family's lack of activity. Lissa, however, was a great target. He pushed her age, the danger of spirit, and the fact that her being there in the first place was a violation of the law. Marie's speech was much more thoughtful and detailed. She laid out very explicit plans on all sorts of issues, most of which were reasonable. I didn't agree with all she said, but she was clearly competent and didn't lower herself to mocking her competition. Unfortunately, she wasn't nearly as charismatic as Rufus, and it was a sad truth that that could make a big difference. Her monotone closing summed up not only her speech, but also her personality.
Those are the reasons why I should be queen. I hope you enjoyed this talk and will vote for me when the time comes. Thank you.
She abruptly sat down. Lissa's turn came at last. Standing before her microphone, she suddenly saw the chalice's dream, where she'd faltered in front of the council. But no, this was reality. She wouldn't fail. She would go forward.
"We're a people at war," she began, voice loud and clear. "We're constantly attacked, but not just by Strigoi, by one another. We're divided. We fight with one another. Family against family. Royal against non-royal. Maroi against Dompier. Of course the Strigoi are picking us off. They're at least united behind a goal. Killing."
If I had been sitting there in that audience, I would have been leaning forward, mouth open. As it was, there were plenty of people there to do it for me. Her words were volatile, shocking, and utterly captivating.
"We are one people," she continued. "Maroi and Dompier alike."
Yeah, that got some gasps, too.
"And while it's impossible for every single person to get their way, no one will get anything done if we don't come together and find ways to meet in the middle, even if it means making hard choices."
Then, extraordinarily, she explained how it could be done. True, she didn't have the time to give fine details on every single issue in our world, but she hit a lot of the big ones, and she managed to do it in a way that didn't offend anyone too badly. After all, she was right in saying not everyone could get their way. Still, she spoke about how the Dompiers were our best warriors, and would be better with a stronger voice. She spoke about how non-royals needed a greater voice, too. But not at the cost of losing the exalted royal lines that defined our people. Finally, in addressing the issue of training Maroi to defend themselves, she did emphasize its importance, but not as something mandatory and not as the only method needing to be explored. Yes, she gave something to everyone, and did it beautifully and charismatically. It was the kind of speech that could make people follow her anywhere. She concluded with,
"We have always mixed the old with the new. We've kept magic alongside technology. We conduct these sessions with scrolls and with these."
She smiled and tapped her microphone.
"That's how we have survived. We hold onto our pasts and embrace our present. We take the best of it all and grow stronger. That's how we have survived. That's how we will survive."
Silence met her conclusion. And then the cheers began. I actually heard the roar from outside on the lawn before it started within. People I would have sworn supported others were practically in tears. And I hadn't forgotten that most of the people I had visuals on in this room were royal. Lissa herself wanted to burst into tears, but instead took her due bravely. When she finally sat down and the crowd quieted, Nathan resumed his role.
"Well," he said, "that was a very pretty speech, one we all enjoyed. But now, the time has come for the council to vote on our next leader. And, by law, only two candidates stand ready for that position. Rufus Taurus and Marie Conta."
Two Maroi, one each from the Taurus and Conta families, came forward to join their respective candidates. Nathan's gaze fell on Lissa, who had risen like the others but stood alone.
"According to the election laws, laws set down since the beginning of time, each candidate must approach the council, escorted by someone of their bloodline in order to show family strength and unity. Do you have any such person?"
Lissa met his eyes unflinchingly.
"No, Lord Ivashkov."
Then I'm afraid your part in this game is over, Princess Dragomir.
He smiled.
You may sit down now.
Yup, that's when all hell broke loose.